Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Death of the physical body was not the end of life for either one of these men. And can we please just remember that? Even though it's so simple, it's so elementary. I dare say that probably everybody in this room says, of course, we believe that we live on after this death. But do you really believe it? Do you really understand it? Do you really believe that this life is not all there is, but that there is a life beyond that is worth thinking about and preparing for and considering in everything that you and I do?
Eternity is for real. Jesus told a story of two men, a rich man and a beggar. When they both died, Jesus tells what happened to each of them. One went to a place of blessing and one to a place of torment. Death did not end their existence. In today's study, Pastor David will teach about what's waiting for us after our life here on earth. And Jesus is careful to explain and describe all of it as well. If our life is not limited to this one, isn't it worth it to live in perspective to how our choices will impact our eternity? Well, let's join Pastor David for part one of his message, Witness of Hades.
Luke chapter 16. We got a really exciting passage of scripture in front of us here this evening. Just a word before we begin verse 19, we should remind ourselves of the general context of Luke chapter 16. It has a lot to do with money and material things, and you'll see why that's relevant when we get into the story that Jesus is about to tell that takes up the end of this chapter. But the general context has been to speak about the importance of money and material things and how it's very important that they be put in the right kind of context for those who will be followers of Jesus. So with that in mind, take a look now, starting at verse 19 of Luke chapter 16. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's tables. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. Pretty dramatic beginning to a very dramatic story, don't you think? I mean, right here, the picture is painted with a lot of vividness and clarity. You have two men. One of them is an unnamed rich man. And we don't know anything about this rich man except that he loved to live the high life. He had the best clothes. He ate gourmet foods every day. And he lived his life with a total disregard of others. And why would we say that? Well, we point out the disregard of others because we take a look at this man who sat at his very gate. In other words, this man wasn't out front at the supermarket, so to speak, or down at the village, or there at another place. This man was right at the gate. Sort of literally, you could say, the rich man had to step over this beggar every time he went in. And we're given a name to the beggar. His name was Lazarus. I'm going to tell you something right off the bat that I think, I don't know, in biblical circles, it might be somewhat controversial or it may make me a person of less repute, but I'm just going to give it to you as I see it. I don't believe that this is a parable. Now, most commentators do. The majority of biblical teachers and researchers look at this particular story and they say this is a parable. But I'll tell you what I think is different about this. Number one, Jesus never called it a parable. Number two, in no other parable that Jesus gives does he mention somebody specifically by name. And this one has a man named Lazarus. And thirdly, the details of this story, though remarkable, are so vivid and so insightful that they could only come from somebody who knew eternity. Jesus alone was qualified to tell us this story. Now, I suppose if there was a dramatic, miraculous revelation, then maybe Isaiah or Paul or another one of the prophets of old could have given it. But Jesus could have known these people intimately and with firsthand knowledge. Now, again, I want to stress, you know, you may read Bible commentators and listen to other people preach on this passage, and they may present it as a parable. But I just want to be right up front. I'll stick with the minority opinion and say this is not a parable. This is a story. It's a true story. I believe that this rich man really existed. I believe that this poor, pathetic man named Lazarus really existed. And what Jesus is about to describe about their lives really happened. But again, we take a look. There's the certain rich man described in verse 19. He's clothed in purple. He fared sumptuously. By the way, William Barclay says that the idea behind the phrase fared sumptuously is that he feasted on gourmet exotic foods and he did it every day. By the way, the rich man isn't given a name in this story, but traditionally people have called him Dives, because apparently that's Latin for rich. So just the rich man. And then now we see in verses 20 and 21, there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, and he was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed from the crumbs. And I want to emphasize that he wasn't far from the rich man. This wasn't a man down the street. This wasn't a man in another city. This wasn't a man in some other place. The rich man literally had to step over this poor beggar every day when he went in and out of his home. And the rich man didn't do anything against Lazarus. We don't have any indication that he kicked him as he walked by. We don't have any indication that he cursed him as he saw him on the street. What was the rich man's sin towards Lazarus? Utter, complete neglect. Which, by the way, you must admit, is an especially terrible form of hatred. You know, if you really hate somebody, you may not even attack them. You may hate them by saying, as far as I'm concerned, you just simply do not exist and I'm going to ignore you. Anyway, that's how the rich man was towards Lazarus. And then you have these two men. They lived basically in the same space. They could occupy the same space within just a few yards of one another. But you have to admit, it was two completely different worlds. The world of the beggar and the world of the rich man were completely different. So much so that verse 21 tells us that the poor man Lazarus longed to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the master's table. William Barclay says, and I've never heard this before, but I'll just pass on to you what, again, this commentator William Barclay says. He says that certain rich people in that day and age, in that day you would eat with your hands. You didn't use utensils. And so to clean your hands, they would use hunks of bread. And if you were rich enough, you would clean your hand with a hunk of bread and then just toss it. This is what the poor man longed for, these scraps of sort of hand-stained bread that would go from the hands of the rich man. And then if all of that wasn't terrible enough, you got to admit the touch at the end of verse 21 is especially poignant. The dogs came and licked his sores. My son had a question about that. He goes, Dad, what kind of sores do dogs love to lick and all this kind of thing? I don't know. I don't think I want to know. It's just a terrible, disgusting picture, isn't it? Okay, now, you got the picture? Now, verse 22, the story, not the parable, the story continues on. Verse 22, so it was that the beggar died, and he was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. I want you to notice something. Verse 22 tells us that something remarkable happened, that the beggar died, and that the rich man also died and was buried. You might say, well, so what? What's so unusual about that? People die every day, and it's true. People die every day. Sometimes they die expectedly. Sometimes they die unexpectedly. And you could just imagine the contrast between the deaths of these two men. I mean, there's the poor man begging outside of the gate. And when he dies, who takes notice? Would you please notice that it says in the text that the rich man was buried. It says nothing of the burial of Lazarus. For all we know, he was thrown into a pit. He was thrown into a garbage dump. Nobody cared. Nobody mourned. But there's the bed of the rich man. And especially his children are surrounding that bed, aren't they? And they're very anxious about the passing of their wealthy father. And there's tears and there's mourning. And maybe there's anticipation of what they're going to do with the inheritance and on and on and on. He passed with great mourning, with great attention. I'm sure it was a marvelous funeral. I'm sure that no expense was spared. But what I want you to understand is that death was not the end for either one of these men. You see, because even though the poor man named Lazarus had no burial mentioned, he had something mentioned that the rich man did not have. Who carried him away to Abraham's bosom? The angels. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? The idea of the angels taking him and carrying him away, giving him special care. Now, I'm going to say something that seems very obvious, but sometimes the obvious things are the things we need to talk about the most. I entirely believe that the rich man's body stayed in the ground. I entirely believe that Lazarus's, the poor man's, the beggar's body remained on whatever pit he was thrown into. Yet nevertheless, they did not cease to exist, did they? There was an immaterial part of their being that continued to live on. The death of their physical body was not the death of their being. It wasn't just like, well, the rich man lived a good life, the poor man lived a bad life, they died, and that's the end of the story. No. In a way, that's only the beginning of the story. Because death of the physical body was not the end of life for either one of these men. And can we please just remember that? Even though it's so simple, it's so elementary. I dare say that probably everybody in this room says, of course, we believe that we live on after this death. But do you really believe it? Do you really understand it? Do you really believe that this life is not all there is, but that there is a life beyond that is worth thinking about and preparing for and considering in everything that you and I do? I just want to stress the point again because I think it's so important. Death did not end existence for these two men. But neither should we understand that they both had the same existence after death. No, what do we see? The poor man, Lazarus, was carried away by the angels, and he went to a place known as Abraham's bosom. Now, what is it? It's such a strange phrase, isn't that? And it is admitted. What's going on here? Abraham's bosom, what is that? Well, the idea is the idea of cradling something or embracing something close to the chest. And it can have a few different ideas. One is the idea that in death, the righteous are gathered to the patriarchs in faith. You'll see this phrase used a few times in the Old Testament. It says, and he was gathered unto his fathers. He was gathered unto his fathers in death. And the idea is, when the faithful die, they are gathered unto the faithful in heaven. And isn't that a beautiful thought? Isn't that a beautiful thought that some great man or woman in the faith, maybe a great man or woman in the history of the faith, maybe someone who's very dear to your personal life, maybe it's a grandparent or a parent, somebody who's a great spiritual influence on your life. When you go to heaven, you're going to go into their bosom. They're going to embrace you warmly when you get to heaven. That's one part of the idea. There's another part of the idea of simply that it speaks of a parent's love and care. After all, John chapter 1, verse 16 says this. It speaks of Jesus, the only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father. In other words, the Father and the Son have this love relationship. And it means that not only are there people that we love in the world beyond, but there's a relationship of love. And it can also have a third aspect to it. It's simply the idea of privilege. Because to be seated at someone's bosom in a banquet, to be right up against them in a banquet, was a position of honor as shown by the position of the Apostle John there at the Last Supper of Jesus. So really, it just speaks of this place of blessedness where Abraham is, and he was gathered to this place. Can I just say it to you this way? Lazarus, the beggar, went to a good place. The rich man did not go to a good place. I mean, look at what it says of the rich man. It says that he was in torments in Hades. In torments in Hades. Now, I don't want anybody to think for a moment that Lazarus, the beggar, was saved by his poverty. Not for any more reason that we should think that the rich man was damned by his wealth. No, the difference between them was not their wealth, their relative station in life. The difference between them was that Lazarus must have had a real relationship with the living God, and the rich man did not. Their life circumstances made faith either easier or more difficult. But it was the faith, not their life circumstances, that demonstrated their eternal destiny. In other words, I think it was easier for a man who had nothing, such as the beggar, to trust God. He had to trust God for his food every day, did he not? It was a greater obstacle for the rich man, who didn't seem like he had to trust God, at least not for the daily bread he ate. It would be more difficult for him to trust God. But nevertheless, it wasn't because of their relative wealth that they went one to another place. No, quite instead, it was because of their trust or lack thereof in the living God. But look at the situation here described in verse 23 of the rich man. It says, "And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom." Two things I want you to notice here. First of all, it demonstrates to us that it was not a difference between rich and poor. Because I'll tell you, one man who was richer than this rich man, Abraham. Abraham was unbelievably wealthy. And so God isn't trying to say this, well, the rich go to hell while the poor go to heaven. No. But again, we don't want to get too far away from the context. Jesus was warning the wealthy and the materialistic about what they do with things. And that's relevant to this story, of course. But that's one aspect. Look at the other one. The rich man in his torments can look afar off and he can see Abraham and Lazarus. It doesn't seem to him like he's very far from them. Well, I don't know. I'd be fascinated what exactly that was like. Maybe it'd be like the difference between being at one end of this room and the other end of the room. Certainly you could see a person who's standing at different parts of the room. It's not like they're terribly close, but neither are they that far off. He could look across the chasm. He could look across the expanse of space, and he could see both Abraham and he could see Lazarus. Nevertheless, he was in torment while Lazarus, the beggar, enjoyed the comfort and the care of Abraham. Can I quote our dear old friend John Trapp here? He has a way of phrasing things, does he not? This is what John Trapp said about the rich man's condition. "Having punishment without pity, misery without mercy, sorrow without succor, crying without compassion, mischief without measure, torments without end, past imagination." Well, that was his condition. Again, notice this. Verse 23 says, "Being in torments in Hades." Now, without one word Hades, Jesus described a place. I mean, he didn't say in Antarctica. He didn't say in Cleveland. He said in Hades, a particular place. Well, what is this place, Hades, that Jesus mentioned? You see, it's interesting to see that the rich man and Lazarus were not in the same place, yet they were not terribly far from one another. It would be fair to say that they were actually in two different places, two different regions or areas of the same general place. You know, it was as if you divided this room into two parts. And I'm not going to say which one of you is Abraham's bosom and which one of you is the place of torment. But, you know, just divide the room mentally in two parts. Okay, well, one part, it's one room. One part of it is a place of blessedness. The other part of it is a place of torment. Now, from this story of Jesus, we find some hints describing the world beyond as it existed in the past and how it exists now. From Jesus' description, we may say that at one time, before the finished work of Jesus on the cross, the spirit or the soul of a human being went to a place called Hades. I mean, in death, both of these men with two different eternal destinies, they went to the same general place, but for one, they were in an area of blessing, in another, they were in an area of torment. And so here we see the difference. And it's described by the word Hades. Hades is a Greek word. It was the word used by the ancient Greeks to refer to what they just called the underworld, the place of the dead. It was sort of the afterlife, the place beyond. It's not a terribly specific word. Now, this Greek word Hades seems to carry much the same meaning as the Hebrew Old Testament word Sheol, which you find translated many times in the Old Testament, and oftentimes it's translated as the grave. It's just the place of the dead. It's where the dead go. And apparently what Jesus is telling us is things that are sort of indicated, although we have a more clear picture from this particular story, but that before the finished work of Jesus Christ, the dead went to a place. It was the same general place, but for some of them, they were in the area of blessing. For some of them, they were in an area of torment. Now, this is what I want you to understand. Hades, technically speaking, is not what we usually think of as hell, or what is sometimes called the lake of fire. That place is identified with the word Gehenna. Gehenna is actually a Greek word that's borrowed from the ancient Hebrew language. And in Mark chapter 9, Jesus spoke of hell or Gehenna. It's a place outside of Jerusalem's wall, referring metaphorically to what's known as the Valley of Hinnom. And it's a place outside the walls of ancient Jerusalem that was basically a garbage dump. And in that garbage dump, they would throw just refuse. They would throw smoldering things, and there would be burning and worms and decay. And it was just so wretched, and fires and heat smoldered from it all the time, that it became a picture in the Jewish mind of hell, of eternal burning, of eternal disgusting surroundings of this place that is associated with the Valley of Hinnom and is known as Gehenna. When later on the book of Revelation identifies a place known as the Lake of Fire, it would seem to us that Gehenna and the Lake of Fire are the same thing. And let me tell you this, what we can understand from the book of Revelation, there's nobody in the Lake of Fire now. There's nobody in Gehenna now. That awaits the final judgment. That right now, the dead, I would say this, the unbelieving dead, upon their death, they go to Hades. And they are in this place of torment that is described here in this story in Luke chapter 16. But one day they will appear before God in judgment. And at the end of that judgment, they will be consigned to the lake of fire. So Hades is something of a waiting place until the day of final judgment. Yet since the finished work of Jesus on the cross, there is no waiting for believers who die. In other words, we know very plainly from the scriptures that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. That there's no waiting place and certainly no purgatory or anything like that for believers. No, when we pass from this life to the next, we are immediately in the presence of the Lord. That's why Jesus could say to the thief on the cross in anticipation of his finished work, today you will be with me in paradise. There would be no delay, no Hades. So what happened to the good part of Hades? Well, this is apparently what happened at the finished work of Jesus. And in those days, in his entombment, between the time that he was put in the tomb and the time that he was evidently raised from the dead on that Easter Sunday morning, that one of the things that Jesus did is he went to Hades and he freed those who were in Hades and led them to heaven on the basis of his completed work. And by the way, it makes perfect sense that someone such as this beggar known as Lazarus, that he could not yet graduate to heaven yet because the price had not yet been paid at the cross. He went to a blessed place. He went to a good place, but it was not yet the fulfillment of heaven. He was awaiting the final payment that Jesus would bring by his work on the cross. But once that happened, he could go to heaven. And therefore, now Hades, we would say, doesn't have two areas. Hades now just has one area. And those who die in the Lord go directly to heaven. Those who die apart from the Lord go to Hades, awaiting the final judgment and eventually the lake of fire. That's how we would put things together to the best of our knowledge.
Well, that concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast of Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel of Santa Barbara. Join us next time as Pastor David continues teaching verse by verse through the book of Luke. Again, you've been listening to Enduring Word, the teaching ministry of Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. You can learn a great deal about Enduring Word by visiting our website. The web address is enduringword.com. That's enduringword.com. You can listen to the rest of Pastor David's messages from the book of Luke, as well as other messages taught from God's Word right from the main menu. Simply click on Media at enduringword.com. Now, here's some important information about how you can visit Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Hi, this is Pastor David Guzik. Thanks for listening to Enduring Word. I count it a privilege to share God's Word with you every day. If you live in the Santa Barbara area or will be just passing through, I'd like to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara. We meet every Sunday morning at 9 and 11 a.m., and our midweek Bible study is every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. I'd love to meet you in person.
Thanks for that information, Pastor David. For more information, call us at 805-730-1400. That's 805-730-1400. Once again, you've been listening to Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California, a listener-supported program. Please tune in next time as Pastor David continues teaching verse by verse through the book of Luke. That's next time on Enduring Word.